Voices of VR podcast.
Hello, my name is Kent Bai, and welcome to the Voices of VR podcast. It's a podcast that looks at the structures and forms of immersive storytelling and the future of spatial computing. You can support the podcast at patreon.com/voicesofvr. So, continuing my coverage of MetaConnect 2025, today's episode is with Jasmine Uniza. She's the CEO of Impact Realities, as well as Flat2 VR Studios. So, Impact Realities is doing a lot of marketing for VR games, and then with Flat2 VR Studios, they're producing their own games that they're getting out there. And so, translating the existing 2D games into VR, and so either starting from the modder community of people that have already been doing this and creating more of a business model around that, but also to take existing 2D games and completely do a transformation of that game to go beyond what a mod can do and just basically reimagine that game built up from scratch with VR in mind. And so it's a really interesting intersection of what they're doing, of trying to find like really compelling games that worked in 2D and make this translation into 3D. But also she's somebody who is looking at the ecosystem of VR gaming from a very holistic perspective, from both the marketing side of dealing with all the different meta store changes, as well as from their own perspective of trying to get out these games. Because at the GDC this year with Chris Pruitt talking around, okay, there's these pivots and changes where the market is at, but also what Meta is emphasizing. So between those two things of where the market seems to be going with free-to-play games, but also what Meta seems to be emphasizing for what they're supporting or promoting, it seems to be more of both a Meta Horizon World games for free-to-play, but also these other free-to-play games. But what Jasmine is doing with Impact Realities and Flat2 VR is completely opposite for the zeitgeist of where Meta seems to be going. And so they're still finding success in a market for people and demand for people who want more in-depth games. And so we talk around all of the kind of changing ecosystem and things that are happening within the context of Meta and where they're going in the future. And also, what are they doing with Meta Horizon now starting to launch games that are not even available on VR? So the Super Strike is something that's mobile only. So trying to create what's essentially like this Roblox competitor that is trying to expand out the market of virtual reality by this complete pivot into more mobile gaming. And is that something that's going to be a viable strategy? So we explore all that and more on today's episode of the Voices of VR podcast. So this interview with Jasmine happened on Thursday, September 18th, 2025, at the MetaConnect conference at Meta's headquarters in Menlo Park, California. So with that, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Hey, so I'm Jasmine Uniza, and I'm the CEO of Impact Reality and Flat2 VR Studios. We are a number of different things, but we make VR games. We specialize in turning non-VR games, traditional games, like RoboQuest, Trombone Champ, Postal 2, and turning them into VR experiences. We also have a publishing division called Impact Inked, and we also are a PR marketing agency that specializes in marketing VR games.
Right, and maybe you could give a bit more context as to your background and your journey into the space.
Yeah, my background's kind of funny. I started out as a space robotics engineer. I worked on like the Mars rover, and then eventually found my way as a TPM at Apple, working on iPhone factories, and then at Meta on the Quest Pro. But I really always wanted to get into games, always loved technology, obviously, and then realized that there was a really beautiful harmony between the two in making VR games. So I actually started making content during the pandemic, starting out with streaming Beat Saber, and then just kept going from there, started a YouTube channel, started like a TikTok account, and I just really tried to make VR and XR now accessible to the general public with like tutorials, reviews, very practical things. And then my journey into now having co-founded Impact Reality and Flat2 VR Studios, that journey was basically I had climbed my way up in the tech industry, realized that no one's going to hire me in gaming because my background is too heavy in tech, decided I'm just going to quit and give myself a year to see what happens and see if I figure anything out. And now it's been almost 4 years and I haven't gone back. So now we have a company.
Was your whole plan the whole way to be more of a content creator side, and then all the skills you learned from that now are being folded into like marketing and PR and how to advertise and promote things, but also be familiar enough with the production pipelines? Just kind of elaborate a little bit on your entry point into this complete career pivot.
I mean, yeah, it is really a complete career pivot. I've always really liked making content. I actually, back in 2007, 2008, I was making YouTube videos, but my YouTube videos were focused on singing, and I used to do theater, etc. So I've always loved making content, but I also always loved technology. And then when I left the tech world. I mean, at that time, my channel was doing decent. I mean, it had a little bit of momentum. So I figured, okay, well, why not I just give this a shot? At the time, my channel, like my whole brand was making like $300 a month, which is not enough to live off of. At this point, I'd given up. I didn't think anyone would hire me in the gaming industry. Like, I don't have a gaming background, like not professionally, at least at the time. And then I just realized that it's not enough to live off of what I was making on that content. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll do some things on the side, like something, there must be something I can do on the side to help me like supplement income. And because I'd made so much content on VR, I started helping out with making social media posts for different VR games, etc. And then eventually I was doing that so much that me and Eric and Skiva, we had all been doing different things. Like Eric was doing title advising, and then Skiva has just been in the industry for a really long time, was working in LBE at that time and with Vertigo Games. The three of us were like, well, what can we just do together? And somehow the idea was, well, maybe we can do marketing for VR games because we're all content creators. I mean, something we already know. And the whole idea here was just to, for me at least, was just to try something, to do something on the side while I'm doing content creation and see what happens. And now that's completely like flipped over in its head. I mean, I still do content creation because I love it and it comes really natural to me. But yeah, my focus now is for sure heavily building the company and trying to make a really strong impact in the XR space.
Yeah, and so maybe you could also elaborate on the Flat to VR games and how that came into the picture. I had a chance to talk to Eric Masher last year at MetaConnect, where he gave a little bit of his version of that story of how y'all came together. But yeah, I'd love to hear from your perspective of then, you know, doing marketing, but now into what was happening with Flat to VR games and this whole other pipeline for VR content production.
It's kind of funny because when we were doing marketing for games, we started realizing, I mean, obviously we're all content creators, we were and still are content creators. It just was so ingrained in us to evaluate games and try to think about how to make it better, etc. I mean, that's what our channels have been on. And so when we were doing marketing for games, we're like, man, what if they did this? What if they did that? And just change a little bit of their games here and there. So that was already just in our, I guess, in our blood. And then Elliot Tate, who founded the Beast Saber modding community and also the Flat to VR modding community, he saw Eric and Skiva on a podcast talking about marketing. So he looked us up and then he contacted me and said, oh, I didn't know anyone else was doing VR marketing. He's like, I've been doing this for 5 years by myself. I'm so tired of being alone. I would love to join you guys and do something. And we're like, who is this guy? Just kidding. We obviously, a lot of people know who Elliot Tate is. He's been known for many things, not just those modding communities, but he worked on Supernatural in marketing. He worked on Synth Riders and he worked on Zenith. So he's done a lot of marketing things. I've heard about him. And I remember being so surprised that he was interested in working with us because I was like, what? You're like the marketing guy in the VR space. You want to like work with us? So we decided, okay, well, let's try it out for a couple months and see how it goes. And during that time, we realized that he had, you know, he had founded the Flat to VR modding community with a couple of other people, including Rocky Parda. And he also had told us about Half-Life 2 VR mod and how it was doing so well, because that's an official thing that's on Steam. And I mean, of course, Eric's brain, who's like so business minded, he's like, wait, why aren't we doing something with this? This is crazy. You like, everyone obviously wants actual games in VR, and then you already have people that know how to do it. Why don't we just like actually put together a business model behind this? And the very first people we ended up talking to were Holy Wow Studios, who made Trombone Champ, and it was because Rocky Parda had already made a mod for that and was already in close contact with them. And so we reached out and we're like, hey, like, what do you think? What if we make this into an official VR game? And then from there, it kind of just grew really fast into everything that we're doing now.
Did you have to go out and raise any funding in order to do this type of production of content?
So for us, we started with just bootstrapping everything. Actually, the whole company was completely bootstrapped. But then we ended up with, JP from Hartman Capital, he had been following me as a content creator this whole time. And when he found out that I was working, we were building Flat to VR Studios, he reached out and said, oh, we're like really interested in this. And so we ended up getting investment from them. And then for Trombone Champ, while we were working on this game, we obviously had relations with Meta. And so we started talking to them as well. And then they ended up wanting to fund the game, which was really great. But before this, no, that was none of these things were in our plans. Our plans were, let's bootstrap everything, which is what we've been doing with the company at that point for over a year. And like when I say bootstrap, there were times when we were making like not even $1,000 that we were splitting between the three of us for a month. Like we really were just like, let's just do what it takes. Like think ramen noodle on the ground kind of thing. And we were perfectly like, that was our focus at the time, was to go that path. But then, yeah, when there were people that were interested, of course, we decided to partner with Hartman and with Meta on this project, which allowed it to be a much, much bigger project than what we anticipated. And then with Hartman Capital, they actually told us about Speedrun. So A16Z has this accelerator program called Speedrun. And it's just for like, I mean, at the time it was just for gaming companies, gaming startups who want to just go through this accelerator program. We didn't really know if we would get in or not, but we decided, okay, let's just try. Let's just see what happens because the acceptance rate is less than 1%. And then we got in as the only VR company in that cohort where the acceptance rate was less than 1%. We're like, well, geez, like if the universe is telling us, like we weren't even expecting to get in. But when the opportunity presents itself to be in the presence of like people who have worked with such huge, like who invested in companies like Airbnb and Facebook, of course, you're going to say, okay, well, shoot, maybe we should give this a try. And really doing A16Z speedrun was a pretty extreme experience. Basically, you spent 3 months living in LA and just going really heavy on like focusing on your business. Like, what is your business model? How are you going to scale? Like, what is your plan? And it's just like a drill. Like, you get drilled for like 3 months nonstop to just hyper focus on what you're doing. And I really do think that that experience, I mean, you could see it. I think anyone can see how our company has really had a pretty fast acceleration like of growth. And I do think that a lot of that was from, well, a good amount of it was from like the mindset training that we got from participating in A16Z speedrun.
Wow. So it starts with helping to make robots on Mars, and now you're in this collaboration with all these other amazing people making these games and translating from 2D to VR. And so, yeah, it sounds like you've also been in it now. You said like from you were going to give it 1 year and it's been 4 years. And so in the past 4 years, we've seen quite a significant change in how the marketplace and the ecosystem and even Meta's priorities for what they're funding and paying attention to. And so how would you describe the changes that you've seen over the last 4 years when it comes to the marketplace and content ecosystem of VR?
Wow, that is such a loaded question. There's like so many layers to it, but I would say to really simplify, in the beginning, there was not that many games that were out. And so if you made a game and it was a decent game, every content creator would cover it because there was nothing else to cover. I remember that any time a game would come out, we would all be like trying to cover it because it was so empty. So every week, if you had a good enough game, you had a chance to be so visible to the entire audience. But obviously, as the ecosystem has grown and it's changed and the audience has changed, that's not really the case anymore. In terms of Meta, I don't really know, because we only really started partnering with them more recently when we started the studios like almost 2 years ago now. So I don't know what it looks like from 4 years ago, but I do know what it looks like from a consumer standpoint and from like people making the game, so developer standpoint. And I can just see now that it's kind of gone through a series of different changes. So yeah, one, before it was if you make a game, there's so many niches that you can try to target and it was fine because there was probably nothing in it. And then it became a little bit more competitive, and then all of a sudden we saw the boom of obviously Gorilla Tag and now like the younger audience in there. And then in the background we were seeing Horizon Worlds kind of there, but as you can see at Meta Connect, Horizon Worlds is now like such a main focus. We didn't see any headsets and they barely mention any type of games, but Horizon Worlds got its feature about, oh, here's what you can do with Horizon Worlds now. So I just think that it's always ever evolving with Meta. And I mean, I don't know if you can, I think they're just following what they're seeing the market doing and adapting as they see it.
Well, part of the way that I tell the story from my perspective, from what I saw, was that for the longest time, it was almost impossible to get onto the store. You had to be at a certain quality bar, and there's a lot of people that weren't even in the game. And then they had the App Lab, and then that was kind of an incubation that was sort of like a competitor to SideQuest. So SideQuest was able to fill the gap for a certain time period, but then Meta came up with a competitor to SideQuest with App Lab, and then eventually, at some point, they just took all the App Lab apps and just bundled them all together, like in and around when the Vision OS was launching with Apple, where they had a capability of just launching without having to go through all of this justifying your existence through a lot of pitch decks and extra work in order to just submit the app. But then on top of that, when they made that switch, they also opened it up to Horizon Worlds being promoted on the same level as these first-party apps. In some ways, having the third-party VR apps almost hidden in the store, where you had on the app, you have to go up to the upper left-hand corner to push the store icon in order to get to anything that you could actually purchase, but that everything was being pushed on the marquee locations as their own first-party apps of the Horizon world. So it seems like, in some ways, Meta using the third-party ecosystem to develop the ecosystem and the industry, but then at some point making this pivot to say, okay, we have to have our own first-party thing, and that taking up a lot of the auction and air, and that the end result of that, talking to lots of different developers, was that it made it more difficult, like the marketplace and the economics of that storefront and the normal store dynamics completely shifted with a lot of those changes. So I don't know if that's like an accurate recap of that, or if you have anything that you want to change or add.
Yeah, you know, I don't know how I blanked out on the fact that there was App Lab before and not App Lab, because that was such a hot topic during one of our developer roundtables here at Meta Connect. Pretty much, like, developers were, especially free-to-play developers, were quite sad that App Lab was taken away. I mean, even some premium developers, because it was really an opportunity for them to have this playground to test whatever and have it be perfectly okay and not have it completely affect their ratings at launch, because you could always clear it. Yeah, but you're right. When that is really when the massive shift happened is when App Lab opened up, and all of a sudden the curation really disappeared. And then all of a sudden we then started seeing Meta with Meta Horizons, etc. I always think that the whole thing is a bit complicated, because I can see it from all perspectives. Obviously, as a developer and as a game studio, like, we would love for Meta to really focus on us and giving us, like, the store promotions and all of those things. But at the heart of it, Meta is a social media company. And if you're thinking about what is their next evolution out of, like, Facebook, out of Instagram, it's creating a social hub in the metaverse. So of course they're going to have to try that. That's in their DNA. That's in their core. It's almost like, you know, that quote about if you expect a fish to climb a tree, then it'll believe its whole life that it's stupid. It's almost a bit odd to think that a company whose DNA is, you know, social media would all of a sudden pivot their whole company to focus on games, but like games from external developers. That doesn't make any sense. Like, we've seen that they acquired WhatsApp. They acquire everything, build everything, and create a whole ecosystem.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how have the launches been going so far, what you've released?
Yeah, so we launched Trombone Champ. That was our first game end of last year. And I think that went really well, like, considering what was happening with the decline. Today, it is still definitely, like, the biggest revenue generator, although we barely started releasing other games after that during the summer. We did see some pretty good, I think, okay, so everyone was going free to play, and there was this whole mindset that premium is going to go away. But we were just, I don't know, we did not want to believe that everyone has to go to free-to-play to succeed in this industry. So we were like, no, we're going to double down. Let's make, like, the most premium, high-quality games. Let's really target older audiences. And, like, let's see what happens, right? And so during the summer period, we did release, like, a V-Racer Hoverbike, Surviving Mars Pioneer through our publishing division, Impact Inked. And those have done really well. And I think for us, it was just, I mean, it was a sigh of relief. Like, okay, the premium audience is still here. You just really need to give them something good to, like, latch onto. We actually saw really high retention rates on Surviving Mars, for example. Surviving Mars Pioneer is basically a solo game for now, and it's about, like, you building your own habitat and just building your base on Mars. And I mean, people got addicted to this game. I got addicted to this game. At one point, like, very, very early on, we were seeing average player times of, like, over 400 minutes in a 30-day time period. And that's really impressive for, like, a single player, not free to play game. So anyway, I'm very hopeful, because I think what we've seen through the launches that we've done over the summer is that if you make games that are catered to a premium audience, as long as you make the experience premium and you show them the value, I do believe that the older audiences are wanting something.
And what's happening with the flat to VR in terms of the ports from the 2D version into more of an immersive VR game?
Oh, it is full on. Yeah, I hope everyone's ready for RoboQuest. That's coming out the end of this year. I am actually producing that right now through the finish line. I don't know how I keep ending up in the position of producing or games when they're getting close to the finish line. But man, that game is so, so fun. And so, yeah, well, in full force, we're obviously also now developing Postal 2 VR. And we're still working on Wrath Aeon of Ruin VR. Like, there is not a stop. It's just that games take time. So I feel like when we first announced, because we came from the modding community, flat to VR modding, those can happen as quickly as a couple of months if it's a mod. But with actually turning them into VR games, it does take not as much time as building it from scratch, but it's not as fast as a mod. But there are quite a number of releases happening at the end of this year, and we definitely have like Wrath Aeon of Ruin. Oh, so RoboQuest is launching at the end of this year. Wrath Aeon of Ruin is launching spring next year. And then obviously Postal 2 for VR, and also all the Redux for all of the non-VR platforms will also be launching at the end of next year. So we're in full force, and we actually have some other really juicy titles that have not been announced, believe it or not. I know every time we go into like into one of these VR showcases, it just seems like we have so much to announce, but it's actually more that we have not announced, but we're just like, no, we have to release our games first and then we can show more. But yeah, we're hard at work, and there is so many good games to bring to the platform.
Yeah, no, Meta used to have their game showcase, but they've stopped doing it. Now you have Upload does a game showcase, you have IGN that's jumping in to do these one-offs in collaboration with other folks like Doug Northcook's Creature. And then you also had Jamie Feltham, who had like sort of a feature. So what's the cadence for different showcases over the course of the year?
For us, it really just depends if it coincides with enough announcements. Like, we really do love showcases. We think they're great, and we're so thankful for all the people that are making showcases happen, especially since Meta's not doing one anymore. We think that there should be more of it. Really, there should be someone that's like bringing everything together into one big event, which is what Meta Connect used to be. But anyway.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. But yeah, in terms of cadence of showcases, I think they're great. I don't really have any. I think we do them as it seems necessary. Right now, it seems necessary several times a year. So, yeah.
Well, let's get to some of your impressions for Meta Connect. There's been all the announcements, but also a lot of VR content creators were not invited this year. There's a lot of people that would normally be here and want to be here to cover not only the VR games and VR experiences that are being shown, but also to try out some of the latest technology of this completely new neural band paired with the Meta Ray-Ban display glasses. And so, yeah, just curious to hear some of your thoughts on the gathering and some of the larger decisions that have been made.
Yeah, there's no VR creators here this year. It's weird. There's not really, I mean, I think they used, I feel like they used the word or the acronym VR during the keynote just to remind us that they didn't forget about us, even though there wasn't really anything that was announced aside from like that they have a new engine for Meta Horizon and being able to use AI more. Yeah. And then my overall impression of Meta Connect outside of that is, again, I think from like an outsider perspective and thinking about it from a business strategy standpoint, it seems to me that Meta is evolving as they're seeing the market evolve. So the smart glasses has done really well. It's adoptable by so many people, whereas like VR is a little harder to adapt for the general population as much as smart glasses. So it seems like they're really like, okay, it's going well. Let's like double down, triple down, quadruple down. AI obviously has been a huge thing for the past year or so. And they're again like doubling, tripling down. I mean, if you've seen their I think Meta is at possibly like at their highest market valuation. Like, I know they got to it recently. Yeah, I don't know. What was the question again?
Your impressions of not only the announcements and but also kind of the surrounding decisions that Meta has had. And I think there is I have to struggle and fight to even get invited a lot of times. Like, I will get missed. I had to specifically reach out and request, and then I got misclassified. And so when I showed up, I wasn't pressed. But there just seemed to be a lot of my impression is that sometimes with Meta, if they really need, if they're announcing a VR headset, they'll have all the VR creators. But as soon as they don't have anything where they don't perceive that those people could do any benefit from them, then they have more of a transactional, like they just quickly cut off that relationship. And I guess I'm really feeling that, like having Meta, this is their developer event. So they're, of course, available to control who comes here, but having it as invite only, I feel like prevents a lot of people that would have been here at a larger venue. A lot of the content creators are here. I didn't know where they're from, maybe Instagram, and I don't even know if they were interested or covering in it. And I know, so anyway, it felt like a fracturing of the community of people that normally would have been here are not invited. And it feels like a weird, concerning pivot, I would say, in terms of what does this mean for the larger industry as they continue to move forward. And has VR just been for them a stepping stone to AI glasses, but now that they are on that path, they don't need third-party developers. They're just doing first-party apps that are all AI-driven, but really not as concerned with what's happening with this broader ecosystem they've been creating. So that's, I guess, a metaphor for these deeper concerns around their strategy and how committed they are to being in relationship to this ecosystem they're cultivating.
Yeah, those are all really solid points. So Meta Connect this year, definitely, like I said, there was no VR announcements. There's no VR creators. It doesn't feel anything like it felt in the previous years. And I just don't really know how to feel about it. I guess I keep going from a business strategy standpoint, since I guess that's what I'm usually thinking about. But for them, they're leading into that direction of AI and their, you know, Horizon Worlds and smart glasses, which is a smart move for them. But it is really, really sad for any like of the VR developers. It actually does really feel a bit sidelined. And it's just sad. I don't really like, I mean, for me, I guess I never expect anything out of anyone. Like, I don't expect that companies would continue to focus on whatever, like on VR. So it is sad, but I don't know. Yeah, that's it. I feel like it's really sad. And I do hope that they will continue to invest in VR. It seems like it, because, I mean, like they have Deadpool coming out at the end of this year. That couldn't have been a cheap game to make. And, yeah, it sounds like they're going to be making more headsets coming up. So maybe this was just a quieter year for VR, which is what I'm hopeful is the case. But going back to your point, it definitely does feel completely different from what it was previously. It does not feel VR-focused at all. And yeah, I think that the general sentiment around the developers that are here is that we wish we were focused on more. We wish we got a little more attention, not just from being able to attend Meta Connect, but also on the store. The store is just, you open it and it is a lot of Horizon Worlds, which is, that's great.
Yeah, they switched things up this year. Everyone was required to go to the developer keynote, so they had everybody that's here there. And then what they're announcing is like the new Meta Horizon studio and the game engine that they have that's also new. And they did announce that there's an SDK, which at least there is an option for the developers to develop in a very constrained way for these new Meta Ray-Ban display glasses. But it just felt very limited in terms of the developer features that they were announcing. And so I don't know if you have any impressions for, as someone who's watching the developer keynote, what type of things were coming up for you as you were seeing what Meta was focusing on?
I mean, the parts where they did focus on VR, it was more about highlighting the different successes that has happened recently and just showing that there's opportunities to be had here, which I agree, those opportunities would be a lot easier to get if we had more store promotion and just a little bit more focus on third-party games. So I don't disagree that there's not opportunities to be had. I just, a little bit more help to have them would be nice.
It's almost like they're putting their hands and tipping the scales, as it were. Yeah, they're in control of the algorithm for the store now that works.
So I like go into Horizon Worlds here and there, but it's definitely not the main thing that I go into when I get into a headset. But that is a large majority of what is shown to me on my mobile app, for example. When I'm trying to scroll, I'm like, I want to know what's new. Like, let me like scroll around and see what's up. And I get shown, like, I have to go past a lot of these Horizon Worlds. I'm like, I go into Horizon Worlds, but it's not the main thing. And you would think that the algorithm would have been adapted to match our actual use cases per player. But it does seem that there is, I mean, I don't know. Apparently, the focus is if they get Horizon Worlds popular, especially on 2D platforms, that that would bring people to VR. That's the strategy that I've heard.
Nice. Well, and finally, what do you think the ultimate potential of virtual reality and all of its applications in gaming beyond, and what do you think the ultimate potential of all that might be and what it might be able to enable?
I actually, so that, no, there is one thing in the keynote that they mentioned, which is that there's a lot more people that are like casual viewers and casual users of VR headsets. And I actually quite like that. I mean, obviously that means that they're not going into our games, but I like that they're in headsets at all. I'm like, yes, get in a headset and try out all the different things. At some point, hopefully they'll like stumble upon one of our games if it's shown on the store enough. But I thought that that was really interesting, and I do think that the move towards having displays in smart glasses was also a really good move. I mean, to me, we're like in the future. That's pretty crazy that we have like small form factors that have displays. And they did mention that you can now start developing like apps for these like Ray-Ban Metas and smart glasses, which is really exciting. And I don't know, hopefully people get used to having displays in front of their faces, and then it becomes closer and closer to what VR is, and that all just merges together, and all of a sudden our audience base in the VR space just, I don't know, becomes unlimited.
Nice. Is there anything else that's left inside you'd like to say to the broader immersive community?
To the broader immersive community, keep going. You got this. You know, it's a passion-driven industry, and I think we are the most passionate, in my opinion, and it shows. Yeah, and so I'm hopeful. I am very hopeful. If I wasn't hopeful, I wouldn't be here, and I wouldn't be continuing to put all my eggs in this basket. Like I said, we saw really good signs over the summer that it is not all free to play. People are definitely willing to pay the premium, and I mean, I don't think our games are priced that cheap. They're like $29.99. That's like as far from free as you could possibly go, basically, without being, you know, the Batman price. But yeah, I think that it's there, and we just have to like unearth it. And you know, that is our goal with our company, is definitely continue to create really substantial games in the industry, and the ones that feel premium, that serve the audience, that really built the heart of this community, in my opinion. And we're gonna keep going, and you all should keep going, and we can do this.
Awesome. Well, Jasmine, thanks so much for sharing a bit more of your journey into the space and this charmed career pivot that you have had from going from what you were doing before, what you're doing now. And so it sounds like you really have a great team that you've put together, and that you're really operating on all cylinders in terms of the different types of projects that you have, the wide range of different things that you have going on. And yeah, it sounds like a really exciting lineup. And there's, I guess, some broader meta ecosystem things that are beyond your control, but hopefully that'll sort itself out one way or another, or at least, you know, find ways of connecting what you're doing to the audiences that would be interested in this. And so it sounds like you've had some success of being able to do that so far, and so I wish you the best of luck as you continue to do that. And thanks again for joining me here on the podcast to help break it all down.
Thank you. I'm very optimistic, and thanks for having me. Bye.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of the Voices of VR podcast. And if you enjoy the podcast, then please do spread the word, tell your friends, and consider becoming a member of the Patreon. This is a part of the podcast. And so I do rely upon donations from people like yourself in order to continue to bring this coverage. So you can become a member and donate today at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thanks for listening.